Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. All hoop, all the time, great stories. This is going to be part two of my man Tremaine Foakes. When we last talked with Tremaine, we were talking about his journey to the NBA, growing up in L.A., the hard times in college, the disappointment with some of the guys who coached him in college. Now we get to professional basketball. Remember, he finally got the call up and stuck with the Clippers, a kid who grows up in L.A., bounces all around, and gets to come home. His agent calls him and says, hey, congrats, you're going to L.A. to sign the NBA. Awesome, the Lakers know the Clippers. But the Clippers at that time had moved to Staples Center. They were very, very young. And let's continue our catch-up with Tremaine Foakes. Okay, part two with my man T. Foakes. All right, Tremaine, let's get to, okay, so now you're a member of the Clippers. We talked about how you grew up a Laker fan and you finally get a shot, you're finally in the league, but it's with the Clippers. And at this point in time, the Clippers aren't very good. You get done with that season, okay? This is 2003. Now you played a little bit in the league. What happens?
During that transition from the Clippers to Detroit, I did have a couple, you know, I had a good second year. The third year, Dunleavy got rid of everybody. You know, he shipped me out. Well, he got rid of me, Melvin Eli, Chris Wilcox, Lamar Odom. I mean, he got rid of damn near the whole team. We were shipped out different places. I ended up being with Detroit. I thought I would stay that third year, but you know, Bobby Simmons came in and Mike Dunleavy Jr. came in there. So he kind of reshaped the team the way he wanted to. And actually I had only had about 100,000 guaranteed then. And I said, well, they're not going to keep me. At least I can at least have some money to try to see where my next stop would be. And long enough, it was Detroit. And quick story, you know how I got to Detroit. During that preseason, we had a lot of injuries, you know, with McGaddy, Q Rich, Lamar. That gave me the opportunity to play. And those minutes I took advantage of, and it actually was, Doug, that Detroit was my best preseason game. We played Detroit. In Detroit, I had about 17 points, not knowing that in hindsight it would come full circle that I would end up playing for Detroit. So you never know, a preseason game can get you a job for another team at the end of the day. And that's what happened.
What was LO like at that point in time in his career?
Lamar?
Yeah.
You know, I think he was trying to find his niche that he once had already when he entered the league, you know, as a high profile player. With him getting into, you know, some trouble with, you know, failed drug tests, you know, this or that, it kind of weighed in on him and probably affected the team a little bit, you know, with, you know, any distraction that's not on the court, you know, is going to kind of stick with the team as a whole. But he had the support from us. He had real good support from his team. You know, he had good support from myself. But, you know, we were hoping the best for Lamar. It just seemed like he just couldn't get over the hump with, you know, problem here, problem there.
What about you personally? So, like, before we get to in Detroit, you're in L.A., you're with the Clippers, right? But you're, like, an L.A. guy and you're back home, like, Were you a hangout guy? Did you go out? Did you like what at that point in your life? What was it like?
It was a blessing. So, you know, it was a catch-22. You're like, you're at home, but you don't want to be out too much. You don't want any. I was kind of nervous too. I didn't want to get in any trouble. You know, somebody that's playing for their hometown team, you know, the chances are more likely for you to accidentally slip on, you know, get caught up in something. So my thing was, practice, go home, eat dinner, and maybe go to the gym and work out at night. Now, don't get me wrong. We went out as a team. Yes, we were a young team. Compared to Detroit, we might have been the youngest team in the league, you know, that I ever played for. Everybody was in their 20s, you know. So going out on the weekend as a team, it was more safe to me than going out with my friends, you know, and not knowing you know, what is going on, whatever situation they might have had. You know, maybe once in a while I did, but I played it safe at home.
What was the organization like at that point in time? Okay, because you guys are in the sports arena. Where'd you even practice that when you were the Clippers?
No practice facility yet. We practice at two places. We practice at the Spectrum. That would be, I would say, Manhattan Redondo, the Spectrum gym. That was nice. It was pretty good. But of course, we get to share it with everybody else who has memberships. You know.
So is that, you practice at a workout club, right?
Yeah, right. And we had Southwest College, Southwest, where we're practicing where everybody that goes to school. So no privacy as an NBA team, but we had to get the job done. And Southwest actually wasn't a bad place to practice. But, you know, then again, it's Southwest College. You're in the hood.
It's crazy, right? you think about it then, right? Like, even the Clippers now, how they have a facility, but they're building a new practice facility. It's like their second one. They're at Staples, but they're going to build a new arena. As opposed to then, you guys played in literally the worst arena in the NBA.
Right,
And you had no practice facility. Do you have any interactions with Donald Sterling?
No, you know, I shook Donald's hand a couple of times. He was really here and there. You know, he'll pop up when he wanted to, you know, but I definitely saw his name on my checks every time, you know. So he definitely had his imprint in the team, and he'll make his appearances every now and then. Elgin Baylor, you know, rest in peace, Elgin. He was pretty much, you know, the fixture in being seen, coming to practices. Quiet though, but showed himself with his appearance. And seeing Elgin, he's a legend. So when you saw Elgin, you said, okay, you know, him as a GM, he's taking it serious. You know, the organization didn't have the success. It just didn't seem like the organization wanted to really commit to players, you know? And that was just, they're finally over that hump, of course.
And ownership's a big deal. So take me into what it's like you're in the league, everybody knows everybody, right? And yet you're in the same town as the Lakers. But this time the Lakers have Shaq and Kobe, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so they have Shaq and Kobe, so you're like, you're in the same league, but you're not in the same league. Would you guys ever see those guys out? And like, what is that? Did they treat you with respect? They look like the Clippers, right? What was that?
You know, we were a tier down from the Lakers. You got to think the Lakers already won a couple of chips. So they really own the city. Okay. And you already know the history. We were just trying to get our feet wet at that same time. And I think after I left, Clippers finally went to the playoffs. But getting, you know, it was mutual respect from both sides, you know. I remember seeing Shaq out, Devin George, you know. I mean, you had all the players going. You might have seen Robert Horry out a couple of times. So the love was mutual from us, but as far as outside the public, oh, yeah, they definitely – it was a Laker first town. And it's always going to be like that, you know, Tinseltown. It's always going to be like that. But the love is mutual. Once you're in the league, everybody talks and understands the grind. And it was a pleasure to kind of see the Lakers out there. You know, you really didn't see them unless you were playing on the court.
What is that for somebody who hasn't experienced – the lifestyle of a dude who might play or might not play on a given night, right? Like the most you played your second year with the Clippers, you played 37 games.
Right.
That means there's more than half the games you don't play. So again, and this is like more instructional, right, than anything else. Cause I think dude's like, oh, that's the greatest deal ever, right? You just go show up, lay up lines, beat some dudes, buy the towel. Okay. Yeah. But that's not really how it goes. Right. So take me into like you're with the Clippers. Let's say it's your first year. Was Dunleavy the coach your first year? When your first year with the Clippers, who was?
My first year was Alvin Gentry. My second year was Alvin Gentry. Towards the end of the year, they fired Alvin and let Dennis Johnson, you know, DJ, rest in peace.
Okay. Who you had a good relationship with, right, from going back to minor leagues.
Yeah, good relationship. So that worked out good as far as my confidence, because DJ would give me the confidence to you know, go out there and say, hey, man, you belong out here, Trey. You know, no matter how you got here with a couple of 10 days and this and that, you're here. So go out and play.
Okay, let's go back. When that 10-day, when they say, hey, they're picking up your 10-day and you get extended for the whole season, what's that feeling like? What do you remember about those moments?
That's a great feeling. And I was just reminded of that same feeling when I was watching ESPN. They said, DeMarcus is signed for the rest of the year.
DeMarcus Cousins, yeah.
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins. That took me back right there. And, you know, for somebody like him, that's nothing. You know,
he's got $100 million in the bank.
Right, right.
Okay, so like when you get called up. Okay, how much money would you have in your bank account? Like when you're playing in minor league basketball, you know,
minor league, I would keep about maybe $3,000 in there. You know. You're not making the money's not there, you know.
Okay, so then they come in, they're like, we're picking you up for the rest of the season. You're like, oh my, I'm like, you know, again, it's prorated, six finger gig.
Who cares? If it's prorated? You're getting maybe 3 years of D-League ball money in, you know, 3 months. So that was great, you know, pick up a quick maybe 40,000, 50,000, 60,000. Was great, you know, for me just to, because I'm thinking that, you know, I'm starting to make plans to go overseas. You know, I've done it before.
Make money. Yeah, make money.
That's where everybody, you have to support your family. My girlfriend then was just, she was pregnant right about then. So it was kind of a blessing to kind of get that call up at that time. So
okay, so then what is a day in the life of a dude who, you're playing for Alvin Gentry. Okay, did you guys always have shoot around?
Yes, unless we went on a three-game winning streak. We might get that. We might get a shoot around off or two.
Okay, so you have shoot around was like what time?
Shoot around would be about 9 o'clock.
Okay. So 9 o'clock, you go for how long? Go for an hour?
We go for an hour. You got to think the earlier in LA to get things over with is better. The traffic is horrible. So I was always forward to, because, you know, my thing was, I do not want to be late to any meetings, any practices, any shoot arounds. They should say, hey, Trey should know this city like the back of his hand. So anytime you can get me in and out, I'm there. So
So you're done at 10. Okay?
Done at 10.
Would you stay and shoot? You go, I'm going to go get my nap. Like, what was your routine?
I would stay. I would make sure when you're the 12 and 13th guy, you know, sometimes I did start this and that, but you have to think I'm trying to earn the respect of the coaches as well. I would stay after, you know, and shoot, make sure, you know, hey.
Hop in some games in the Spectrum. They start running the Spectrum. You hop in, get a little run. You guys want to go?
Yeah, a little run. You might get an extra 15, 20 minutes, not get kicked off the court at Staples before the next team comes in. So. So, you know, it was no consistency, but you had to make it things consistent around you, you know? So that right there, making things consistent around you was great. And that was my job, you know? That was my job.
Okay, so then you would get to the arena at what time? 7 o'clock game, what time you get to the arena?
7 o'clock game, Doug. I would be at the arena by 5:15. I was one of always the first ones to get to the arena. You know, the players, starters get there by 5:45. So I would definitely be there about 30 minutes early. And it felt good to be the first one there. You never want to be stuck in traffic. You never want to be late. You just want everybody. Once you're in that arena, something about going through the tunnel. And once you're there, it's like, okay, I'm here. My mind is right. I can concentrate and focus in on the game.
Okay, so you get out there, you get what, a half hour in? Would you get a lift in? Like,
I would get a half hour in. I'll be able to take my time, get dressed, be out on the court, maybe talk to a few fans, interact, and get my shots up, work out with, you know, one of the player development coaches, and pretty much just get in that mindset of if I was going to play. Just like you said earlier, I didn't know if I was going to play or not. You know, I've gotten calls maybe 8 a.m. and say, hey, Trey, we're taking you off the IR, so be ready. So I've learned to always, you know, be prepared, because you never know. If you're on an IR, if you're going to get caught up that day, even the day of, you know, I've had to get dressed. Oh, we're taking you off the IR. So be ready. And I remember a time or two that you just take for granted, like, I'm not going to play. So I'm just going to be like ML Carr and root my team on. But, you know, the league is going so fast right now. You know, you never know. You know, guys need a day off real quick. They come and say, okay, hey, it's more common for guys to take a day off that game or just to get pulled. You know how it is now.
Yeah.
Oh, that kind of works out. It's a catch 22, but it kind of works out for the guy at the end of the bench if he stays ready. He's got to stay ready. So that was my thing. Preparation, you know, was my thing to make sure I stayed ready just in case my number was called.
Now, when you get done working out, would you go back and shower or you just stay loose and warm? What was your thing?
I would go back and then interact with all the with my teammates because everybody is there by then. It's 5:45, everybody's in the locker room.
Funniest dude you ever played with in the pros. Like guy, like I go to him and I'm just
You know, like Keon Dooley was a pretty funny guy, man. I miss playing with Keon Dooley. Another guy that nobody thought was funny, but he was funny to me was Darko Milicek. They called him the human cigar because he would just, you know,
every pitch cigar. I played against him when I was in Israel.
Oh, so
I was in Israel in 2001, 2002.
Oh, wow.
And right before he got, yeah, I thought he would be good.
Yeah.
I thought he'd be good. Like, I think he'd be good in the league now. Plus, he shouldn't have played for LB. Like, that was a bad.
Worst decision. But quick question. Did you like Israel? Did you like that?
Hell yeah. It was great. It's great. They messed around with the money. They got a little silly with the money.
Yeah.
But as far as places to live, like, yeah, what's not to like? They speak English.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like basketball. It was nice. Okay. So you go to Detroit, then you go to Indy. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
And if memory serves, you were on the floor or you were dressed the night of the Malice of the Palace, correct?
No, I wasn't dressed that night. I was dressed the following night after Steven and Ron got into the squabble. You know, they got
okay. So, but you were there that night.
No, I wasn't there that night. I came the following night. I was the backup. Now they had
so where were you when it happened?
I was right here in Sacramento. When that happened, I was in front of the couch watching it. Like, oh my gosh, is this crazy? You know, I'm like, wow. You know, I was with Detroit the year before. I'm like, what's going on here?
So you had gotten cut by Detroit?
Yes, they did not pick me up for the following year. So I was kind of shocked at the same time. Like, okay, this is kind of different. But at least they had told my agent and I, Bill, they said, hey, we like Trey. You know, we know a couple of teams that would sign up, but, you know, we're looking in another direction. It was very respectable. I've been cut, you know, away by teams and, you know, by phone call. And I end up not being how you do that. And Rick Carlisle, you know, Mike Dunley, they actually had to bring me back in when situations happen like that and say, hey, I apologize for the phone call. I should have brought you in. So at the end of the day, I do respect them for that. But yeah, I was on the couch, Doug, when that fight happened. I'm like, man, is this real? I couldn't believe it at first. And then I'm going to the gym the next day to work out. And my agent calls and says, hey, are you ready to play? I said, you already know. He said, hey, you're going to Indiana right now. I said, are you serious? I'm going to Indiana right now? He said, yes. They suspended them and they need another player. So I did a post like they needed another squabbler just in case they had.
They need an LA guy. They need an LA guy.
Yeah,
they knew about Crenshaw. They didn't know you grew up in Baldwin Park, though. They were like, they knew Baldwin Park. They were like, oh, he's kind of soft. That's, you know. His mom wouldn't let him out after dark. Okay. So you get to, was it in Detroit? Was their next game? What was their next game?
That next game, that's a good question. That next game.
I can look if you'd like.
That next game we played was, that's a good question, Doug. That next game we played, I met them out of town. Where did we play them? Gosh, we played.
Rick Carlisle was the coach, right?
Rick Carlisle was the coach, and we, you know, no. You know what? That we came back for a home game.
You played Minnesota at home.
Yes.
Did you play? You play in that first game?
Minnesota. Yes. There you go. I played that game.
So you come back. Hold up. You're about to go to get a little workout at like LA Fitness, right? Or 24 hour.
At Jam Town. It's, I mean, not Jam Town, Basketball Town, working out.
Okay, so you're going to go to Basketball Town in Sacramento.
Correct.
Okay, why are you staying in Sacramento? Your girl is there?
Well, my girl that I met at Cal, she is from Sacramento. And my trainer ended up being out here, Gus Armstead, who was, you know, trained everybody, you know, college, pros, high school. And it kind of happened I didn't know it was going to happen. It just happened like, hey, I'm here working out now. So I ended up making Sac my home.
And okay. So you go there.
I'm going there to work out. Great workout. Gus says, hey, Bill wants you to call him. I said, okay. I kind of didn't take it.
Duffy? Bill Duffy?
Bill Neff.
Bill Neff. My bad. I love Bill Neff.
Yeah, so I went.
He had all his point guards. What do you have you for? He had right. Point guard.
I changed the game for him. You know, it was something he saw. I was like, hey, Trey, you can do it. You can do it. You're working hard. I said, you know what, Bill? You coming to me telling me that? Let's get this done. So I signed with Bill, you know, after Bill Duffy and various agents. And I stuck with Bill to the, you know, throughout the whole, my whole career. He was great.
So you get there and they're like, by now, everybody, back then, everybody kind of ran the same stuff, right?
Right.
You guys run Hawks? We run Hawks. You guys run Horns? We run Horns, right? But what was it like around that team when you had, I believe still at that time, they had suspended him, but they hadn't ruled the final suspension or whatever. Those guys were suspended the rest of the year. What was it like to take the floor in a Pacer uniform, considering the fight?
It was special, you know. First of all, you're taking it. You're in something that's infamous. That fight is going to be infamous, and just for me to be a part of something, you know, for the better, to help recover something that went so bad, and I'm there the next day, was great. But just to be able to walk in that arena and be able to, when somebody comes up to you and his name is Reggie Miller, you're like, oh man, come on, Reggie. The guard and Spike Lee, you know, you just think about so many just things that make you say, oh, he's a legend, you know. And just like you, we're in the same age group. We watched Reggie a million times, the New York battles, the Georgia.
I was his ball boy at UCLA because Rashid and Doc Hazard were on my AAU team.
And oh, right. So, yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, so me and Tutu, we used to go and we'd be a ball boy.
What up, Tutu?
and go to UCLA games. So yeah, I mean, Reggie Miller is like a god. Like there's like an aura around him.
The history is crazy. And not only that, it gets even better. Now after a game, I'm getting dressed, and guess who walks up to me? The GM. And it's not just any GM. It's Larry Bird. I'm like, wow, I never saw Larry in a suit, you know? Wow, I'm just so used to seeing the green 33. So,
Did you tell him you hated him as a kid? Did you say, like, I hated you? I'm an L.A. guy. I hated you guys.
Not Larry Bird as much as probably as a Danny Ainge or a Kevin McHale.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, there's like a begrudging respect from L.A. guys on Larry Bird, but everybody hated Ainge, right? Yeah, hated Ainge. And then... And then you sort of didn't like McHale either.
Right. Yeah. McHale and Ainge, they taught you not how to like them. You know, they were totally into their team. It's either their team or F you, you're out of here, you know. And, you know, that works, though. That works. You know, you're not going to have the most fans, but hey.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Okay, so that season's over in Indy.
Okay? Yeah.
And you went back to the D-League. What's it like to go back after you've been in the show, right? You've been in the NBA to then go back to the – how long is that harder or easier to be in the D-League as opposed to when you're in the D-League before you got made in the NBA?
It's, you know – you definitely have to have a strong head. You know, you have to humble yourself. It's very difficult to take a step down after you had success, you know, winning a championship, being on some top teams. You know, it's not like I was playing for the Grizzlies, you know, and the Raptors for a while. You know, of course they won, but I was able to at least elevate myself from the Clippers, you know, to Detroit, Indiana, and be able to play on both sides of the coast and be able to take all that in was great. But then you had that, you take all that into a bubble and you have to take it down to the minor leagues. So you like, okay, you have to be mentally prepared. Preparation. So you just don't feel like you're in a spot where you can't get out of. And you have to use this as a moment to help other players out that are trying to get where you've gone. So you have to look at it in a positive way. So my thing was, if I'm coming back down here, I'm going to be a, you know, a stand-up veteran, so-called. You know, hey, I'm going to be a teachable guy. I can teach you the do's and the don'ts. You know, hey, this is how I got my first call-up. You effing up this way. Try it this way, okay? Put some more time in here. Hey, talk to the coach some more. All the intangibles, you know how it is. You need to do all the intangible stuff sometimes to survive in the league, you know. And for me, I felt I survived long enough at that time to be able to give advice to the youngsters. And they need it these days. You know, they're built different this day and age. It's been like that for a while now. But I had to use it as a teaching moment so I wouldn't feel like, okay, I'm down here in the minor leagues, man. I'm depressed. And you get in that mold sometimes, but you have to pull yourself out, man, to make sure you're using yourself as a positive for somebody else.
Okay. Let's go back to when you're in Detroit during the NBA finals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, you grew up Laker fan. Now you're with the Pistons. Okay. What did you think going into the series? Like, was you like, we got them? Or, I mean, like, remember, they had Karl Malone, they had Gary Payton, they had Shaq, they had Kobe. Everybody knew that Shaq and Kobe weren't vibing at that point in time, but I'm not sure anybody knew how bad it was. What do you remember? What do you remember about going into that series?
I definitely remember that we were the underdog. We weren't supposed to be there anyway. I believe Indiana was the best team that year with Jermaine and Ron. They were the best team. And then you had New Jersey still with Jason and Kenyon Martin. So, we were the underdog, period, you know, straight out. And that was fine with us. I really think that kind of helped us. I felt that the Lakers kind of took us for granted because we didn't have a solid, solid big man. And when you don't have a big man with Shaq, that spells disaster. And we had Rashid and Ben. And both of those guys stepping up to the plate was unbelievable. But going there that first game in L.A., and be able to play in the finals and see and be able to be at Staples and which and be a part of that. The energy level was you can't explain it. You know, being home right now in the finals.
Try. Help me out. So you dressed that game?
No, I'm on the bench. I'm in street clothes. But
okay, yes. So you're in street clothes. You walk out. And you're at Staples.
Okay? Yes,
you're at Staples, and they won the last two championships, right?
Yeah.
And they roll out with all these stars. Right.
Yeah.
You guys roll in and what paint, because this is what you're going to tell your kids for the next 30, 40 years. Well, what was it like? What do you remember?
You're going out and you're walking out. The first thing you see is the 2004 finals on the floor. And you're like, oh, my goodness, this is real right now. OK, we are definitely here right now. This is where it's at. You see things on TV so much and I'm just able to say, hey, I was there, you know. And we want to take it a step further, Doug, and say, hey, I wanted to play. I wish I actually was in that game, you know. But the energy is still the same. You know, the energy is still the same when you're actually there. You're still egging your teammates on. You know, I'm hyped coming out when teams call a timeout. I'm like, let's go. We got it. So you automatically take on the energy as if you were out there. And you know, you're right next. Our Kobe's right taking the last shot, you know, right next to my bench. And I'm like, this might go in right here. You know, he shoots a three last second to help him win. I believe game one. It was either game one or game two because we split games in L.A.
So game one, you got, let's see here.
Yeah, check that real quick.
Game one, you guys won 87-75. Yeah. You held them. You guys held them to 75. They beat you in overtime, 99, 68, 80, and 87. Like, yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, they had dudes. Rick Fox, I think, got hurt. Mm-hmm. I think Karl Malone got hurt.
Malone, Gary Payton was hurt. I mean, they had a lot of, you know, people forget that Carl and Gary was on that squad, you know, as well. But they were hurt that year. And, you know, for us to take advantage of that was great. Because we really, I mean, I'm thinking, like, we have all these Hall of Famers on this team. My goodness. And, you know, once I think we saw their weakness and just made sure we played solid defense.
What was their weakness?
Well, once Kobe and Shaq couldn't get on the same page after we saw that we'll double team Shaq. Shaq would throw it out to Kobe. Kobe wouldn't throw it back in. So that kind of made a little rift between them. And we kind of saw that. And then next thing you know, we're doubling Shaq, and Shaq is like, screw everybody, I'm taking it. And we saw Shaq kind of get out his game a little bit. After that, the players, you know, everybody else on the Lakers team really trying to help them trying to get together. And, you know, and after that, that's where your mind is off. They're focusing on trying to get Kobe and Shaq together when they need to be focusing on us.
Rashid is a guy who everybody who's ever played on the same court as him is like, that dude's always been one of the top five most talented dudes in the league, right? Yeah. But there were a bunch of reasons. He wasn't a workout guy, right? He didn't jive with all coaches. But for that period of time, people remember he was traded first to Atlanta for like a day and mm-hmm. then Detroit. What did Larry Brown do? Because that was the best he ever played in terms of both ends and being engaged fully. Like, how did it work that Larry Brown made it work?
That's a good question, Doug. You know, Larry, you wouldn't think Larry and Rashid would kind of commingle, you know, and it didn't work at times, but Larry actually took a step back with Rashid and kind of let him, you know, do what he does. And that's what you have to do with Rashid. You know, he's, you know, him, his mental and everything is always, he's high strung. So he's always like, yeah, let's go, this and that. And once that kind of spilled on the team in a positive way, it worked. You know, a lot of the top guys were quiet. Ben was quiet. Rip was quiet. Chauncey was quiet.
Chauncey's super quiet, right? Like he's very kind of thoughtful and quiet.
Right.
And much like the same way. Like it's an interesting mix that it all worked out.
Yeah, it was very interesting. So Rashid came and changed the dynamics, you know, and made players open up, you know, and be vocal. And that we needed that. And that kind of fitted perfect. You know, you needed that vocal guy that gave everybody else that little chip on their shoulder. And that's what Rashid came in and did.
Okay. Ben Wallace. At that time, that's like peak Ben Wallace. But there's a dude from like nowhere. Like no one had ever heard of this dude. And then the guy looks like a Greek god.
Right.
What's Ben Wallace really like to be around?
Ben was great. That was one of the best players, teammates to be around on that team. You know, we had a little connection with, you know, our dusted shoulders all come out to start lineup when, you know, they do the introduction. We dust each other's shoulders off. And
so how'd that come to be? Like, who's like, yo, I'm going to dust you. Was that your idea? Was that his idea? Did you see it somewhere else?
You know, remember everybody say, you remember JC said, dust your shoulders off song. So he would come out. Ben wouldn't run through the lineup, you know, he would walk. And I'm saying, since Ben taking his time, he's too cool. Let me just dust his shoulders off, okay? Because, you know, Ben would walk his arms. He's got quarters walking, you know. He's like, hey. I say, you know what? You don't even have to give me high. I'm just going to dust your shoulders off. And then soon to be, he would dust mine off. And then, okay, I say, you know what? Thank you, Ben. I'm going to pop your collar. So I pop his collar, then he pop mine. And we rolled that all the way to the championship. So, you know, something like that, you're never going to forget because that's part of that team camaraderie.
You win game five, okay? Mm-hmm. And people forget no team had ever won all three in a row at home mm-hmm. as the underdog, right? Or as the lower seed. So right. you win. You've been through a lot of shit, right? Like,
yeah,
it was like 16 high schools we went through last time, and two colleges, right? Yeah. D League, overseas, Achilles injury, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't play. So I have a buddy who was on he's played in the playoffs with other teams, and he was on the Cubs World Series winning team. And he was like, doesn't really mean anything to me because I didn't play. But right. For you, when you went through it and you're celebrating, how connected to that team did you feel like when you guys celebrated?
I felt connected, but I can understand, I mean, what your friend is saying, because you don't have on the uniform, you know, but you're on the bench and I'm saying, hey, yeah, I'm in street clothes, but I'm over here just as happy as everybody else, you know? And you have moments where you say, I would have loved just getting in there for 20 seconds, you know, if I could just spell somebody out real quick. And game to game, you have that thought of saying, hey, maybe they might dress me this game. You know, I've been surprised like that my whole career. You're going to have that time. It didn't happen. But then in hindsight, you're like, you're getting all the rewards and you're reaping all the benefits as if you were playing.
And so you see, you went and partied like you had 25.
Right. I said, hey, yeah, we're going to party, you know, like it's 1999.
Okay, here's the question I always wondered. Okay, so you win the championship. You guys all go out together?
We did that night. Yeah, we all went out. And we was it. We did one night. You know, some teams would probably go out the whole week together, you know. But, you know, we did celebrate as a team that night. And, you know, we had fun. You know, they gave us the whole little floor, you know, to have fun at a little VIP. And we just had fun, man. We had fun.
Again, you're like a minimum contract dude.
Yeah.
Like, were you ducking any of the bill? You're like, yo, Rashid, Chauncey, who pays the bill on nights like that?
Oh, you know what? That was always a thing of mine. You last on the totem pole. So they always had the bill covered. You know, the one thing, big ups to Lamar, you know, LO when I was with the Clippers, he always covered the bill. You know, you had Rip, you know, would cover the bill a lot. That was good. You know, they never made me feel like I had to put my 2 cents in, my crumbs. You know, keep your chump change in your wallet, Trey. You're okay.
You get to live off the per diem. Like, man, I get the per diem.
Right.
Well, like, I remember my first time I got NBA per diem was like $95 a day. This is amazing. Right.
Yeah, you're like, hold on. I could get used to this. I could really get used.
I got a funny story. Brent Price is a friend of mine.
Okay.
And he likes to tell the story that what was the name of Big Dog? Not Robinson from Purdue. The big dog they had in Utah with the glasses.
Utah.
Antoine Carr. Antoine Carr.
Oh, Antoine. Okay, yeah.
So he goes, he told me the story. He's like, yeah, we were in Utah. We used to go on this, like once a year, we go on like a 15-day road trip or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? And so whatever the per diem was, like 90, 95 a day, and you get it like in cash. Mm-hmm. And like our first stop, we went somewhere and he's like, this is right when like the portable disc movie things came out.
Oh yeah. Right? Yeah. Flip up. Yeah.
Yeah. And they go to Best Buy together. And you know, Big Dog's got like a sweatshirt. He's got his Oakleys on. And I got, you know, like I got a parka on. We're on the road. We're like in Minnesota and we go to a Best Buy. And like, he literally looked like my bodyguard. Like, hey, I asked him, hey, Big Dog, can I borrow some money so I can get this, you know, display plate, pay cash for it. You know, you reach into your chest pocket and you pull out, you know, like $2,000 in cash that you just got from the team, right? Chump change that to the dudes that stuck in the league, but to everybody else, it was okay. What is the rehab like of coming off of Achilles tendon?
The rehab for me the younger you are, the better, the faster you recover. I had two Achilles chicks. My first one was my left. And I bounced back off that one. That's before I even played a day in the NBA, you know? So I came into the NBA already broken, you know? It was a blessing that I was able to recover fast off that first Achilles tear. But it's a lot of consistent rehabbing. You do have to make sure you don't miss any rehab, you know, the first three months. You know, the therapy and the rehab is crucial. You know, muscle memory is really important for your body, you know, and you have to teach that all over again, you know, and that's the frustrating part. It's like teaching a baby how to walk, and you're looking at your foot, and you're like, will you please walk? Please walk. And it doesn't, you know, it's not an ankle sprain, you know, so you definitely have to let, you know, muscles heal and actually be able to be committed to wanting to get back.
You tore the same one twice or each differently?
No, I tore the right one. I tore the right one in 2005, 2006. And tell you the truth, it went from maybe 10 months of healing, 10, 11 months to a year and a half for the next one. You know, it definitely took a toll out on me to rehab and at least get back just to this level, you know, just to get back to surface level. And then another, you know, 6 months just to try to get your game back. So you're looking at 2 years, Doug, that I was burnt out, you know, with, you know, having a second Achilles injury. And I knew the level of competition wasn't going to be, I wouldn't be able to peak out. So, you know, I was making openings for me to go play in overseas leagues that weren't high level. You know, I couldn't keep up anymore. And, you know, that A, B, you know, the A league, you go kind of B, you know, you would pick certain places, Philippines, Venezuela, you know, all the little places that you
go. Philippines, Venezuela, Puerto Rico are all places to get a quick money grab.
Right. Yeah. You already know
quick money grab. Right?
Quick money.
Yeah. Yes. So when did you decide I can't do this shit? I'm done.
Great question. I would say it just would have to be, actually, it was here in SAC, and my body just would not recover as fast as I wanted to. And then you're looking at guys, you're laying everything up. It's like, oh, Trey, you lost it, huh? You ain't got it no more. I'm like, hey, 2 points is 2 points. But then you tell yourself, like, gosh, I wish I could have, you know, got up higher. Your reaction, you know, you step slow so people can recover, block your shot. You know, people are recovering on you. You go one way and come back left, they're already there. I already changed my game times to help fit my. Now that game definitely caught up to my game.
So what year is this? So you're like, I'm done.
This has to be, you know, my last place that I played, Doug, was Syria. And
what was that like?
I mean, I was right. You know, only a fence separated me and a Turkish embassy with guys having AKs on their shoulders. I'm looking out the window like, wow, I'm really this close. You know, it was an experience. You know, you never saw women. So you only could see their eyes. They show their bodies. You know, you only see their eyes. What do you mean? A lot of just dirt roads, you know. I actually have some footage of Syria that I'm trying to get off my hard drive. And if I can able to let people see what it is, know how
what
it
was
is.
What was the basketball like?
The basketball wasn't that bad. You know, they had a guy on there who they call their mm-hmm. on our team, who called their Michael Jordan, who's actually good. And I said, you know what? You're the best Syrian I've seen play. And I said, if anybody that I've seen that is Syrian, he deserves a shot. He was really good. But overall, you know, the competition was where I wanted it to be. But then you had to have everything work out over there. And when you don't get paid and you're on somebody else's soil for the, you know, first month or two, and you start getting nervous and it's all these excuses, and finally you get, you know, some of your money, you just get delayed with things.
Yeah. And you're just like, I got to go.
And that was, I got to go. Was I got to go home and retire.
So you call Bill Neff and just go, hey, I'm done. Did you just let it lie for a while? Like, how did you handle it?
You know what? I actually retired before that, I played for the North Dakota Wizards 2009. And then that was my last time playing in the States.
Who was your coach?
who was the coach for the Kings 2 years ago? He played. He coached for
Dave.
Dave Yeager. Thank you,
Dave. I played against Dave. So Dave was the coach of the Dakota Wizards in the USBL as well, or he was a coach in the USBL as well. And that was no one of the maybe the. No, he was a coach of a different team in the USBL. Yeah.
Well, I played for the USBL too, the Brooklyn Kings, but that's another story too.
What year?
That was before I even got into the NBA. So that was probably that had to be like 90, like, ooh, that had to be 99. Like 99, 2000. Yeah.
Yeah. So 2000, I played for the USBL Oklahoma Storm.
Okay. Yeah.
And we had a squad. That shit was crazy.
I remember Oklahoma. Yeah, that's
funny. Yeah, Willie Burton. Willie Burton was one. Who else do we have? We had Bubba Wells.
Bubba Wells, that was my. I remember Bubba Wells. Yeah,
yes. I could go through the list of dudes we had. We had really, really good bunch of guys that played in the NBA. Okay, so. So then what? So you decide, all right, you thought you're done. You go to Syria, you come back. Now I'm done.
Yeah.
Then what do you do? Cause I do think that there's some of those guys that are the elite level NBA guys. It's hard for them to come down and to be have real life, but you've had to scrap for everything you've ever had.
Yeah.
So what did you have a plan? Like, what do I want to do when I'm not playing basketball?
You know what? It took a while for me to kind of get. I was, you know, kind of, you know, in a daze of what should I do next? You know, that's a lot of us. And my thing was, I want to stay as close as possible. So I said, let me just start training, you know, training kids and coaching. And then I started doing AAU. And then finally somebody said, hey, Trey, won't you try to get back into the NBA? But this is just a couple years or 3 years out. And, you know, knowing if I had that chance again, I never would have took both my feet out the NBA. Because once you take both feet out, you know, you're pushed out. And my thing was, I tried the NBA assistant coaches program that they had in 2015 and 2017. And after that, I said, you know what, Doug, we got to find something that is consistent for me. So I said, well, let me get a regular job and be a PE coach. And I said, okay, let me go to school and work with kids. And that kind of got me on my second path, which was refereeing. And that led me in to say, you know what, this keeps me close to the game. I'm able to make calls, and I'm able to control something that I had a passion for so long ago. I'm thinking to myself, like, man, I wish I would have thought of this as soon as I got out of the NBA. I probably would have been.
Could be in the NBA referee, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's never too late, but it's a passion that I'm loving to pursue now. And maybe after high school, you know, high school season's back, which is great. But I have to open myself to try college basketball out. And
I got a tee from an official this weekend. I want to ask if you would have teed. Now, look, they were 13-year-old kids, and I said it, and it was a loud gym, but I did not yell at him at all.
Yeah. Okay?
I had a dude come in, drove in, and he leans in with his shoulder, and guess what I thought was an one? He called an offensive foul.
Yeah.
And dude looked like you, right? Like, he's like 6'6". Like, guy looked like he had hooped.
Right.
So he comes by me, and I was like, hey, man, you look like you played, so you know that was a shitty call, right? Yeah. That's what I said. So he banged me, and I was like, what did you give me a T for? He's like, man, I'm a grown-ass man. You don't be cussing at me. I was like, what are you even talking about? I said, shitty. Oh. I didn't yell at you. Yeah.
Wow. See, now, I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised that somebody that would be a former ball that looked like they played ball would actually make it that sensitive. And the thing for me, where I have a rapport with the players and the coaches and the fans, you know, you got to put your ego to the side. You got to set your ego down, set your pride to the side. I never call texts on players and coaches unless you really ask for it, because you have to have a rapport. And a lot of refs want to control the game where they get sensitive and they can't handle any little, you know, thing that somebody says. And they're quick to tee up somebody, quick to throw parents out, quick for, you know, telling a player, I'm going to tee you up next time. And that's where I am, because I have a rapport with everybody before the game. You know, my personality, it spreads, you know, on the court. And you can see that this is going to be a good game. And I don't have to take it to a level you're able to talk some mess. You would have told me that. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to have to watch the tape again. You might be, you know.
No, that's what anybody, anybody does. Yeah, does anybody know? Like, has there ever been a dad or a coach that come to you like, wait, okay, this dude played at ABCD camp. He won state championships.
Yeah.
He played at Cal, at Fresno. He played in the league. He won an NBA championship, right? But when you're running up and down making calls, like, does anybody know?
Yes, and it's pretty cool that, you know, I still – sometimes I get that extra edge when, you know, I'm only an hour from Cal, you know, 2 hours from Fresno. So teams from Cal, you know, from the Bay Area and Fresno come up here all the time. And, you know, it feels good to say, hey, somebody say, man, you were my favorite player at Fresno. Come take it. Can I get a picture? You know, people seeing that like, who is he? You know, who is this guy right here? And, you know, and somebody might come and say, hey, did you used to play ball? And it just brings you back around to when you played and, you know, people kind of give you some love. And that's what I kind of like out this. You know, people kind of remember, you know, not everybody, you know, somebody might even say, hey, you look like a guy that played at Cat. I'm like, man, folks, yeah, that's me.
I get. You look like Doug Gottlieb. Like, I get that all the time.
Right, not actually you, but you look like him, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. What does Doug Gottlieb look like? He's short, white, handsome. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me. You mentioned a book. Tell me about the book.
The book is From the Shaw to the Chip, From Crenshaw to the Championship, man. And we're working on a publishing deal right now, and I'm looking for it to be out this summer. And it's going to be a good book, Doug. And I'm hoping that this book can not only get to the youth, you know, all the way up to college and grown people, but I want this story to be where I can have an impact on other players that have way more success than I've had in the NBA. Made way more money. But what did happen after that? You don't have anything left. You know, all the players I even looked up to, you know, and saw like, wow, man, they lost all that money. And maybe that story can help, just like I said with my story, help a lot of the players that's coming up to not make that same mistake. I mean, it's unbelievable now that you like guys like Antoine Walker lose 100-some million, you know, Iverson waiting on his Reebok money to fall through. You know, I'm glad that Reebok saw that and, you know, left some money for him, you know, back in the store so he can have something, right? Gosh, $100 million. A guy like me only made a couple million, okay? Before taxes, okay? So,
as you're trying to explain him, like, yeah, I had to pay 4% to my agent and I lost 50% of it in taxes.
Right, right.
And I wasn't signing guaranteed deal, you know, 5-year guaranteed deals.
And I'm still telling this story. So, right. So maybe this will help, you know, a lot of players that, you know, people can't believe that they lost all that money. And still, if you show that you're still here to tell your story, that makes yourself that much better. And that much that respect is going to come back that much more. You know, people want to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's what the book tells you. It tells you the unbelievable highs, unbelievable lows, and the midpoint that you had to stay consistent to try to get over the hump. So, you're getting copies as soon as the hardbacks is printed. I'm gonna send some to you. Tell me what you think, man.
I'll read it. I'm in it?
Yeah, of course. You know, I named all the teammates ABCD.
Okay. I mean, did you get the part where my dad sat you? Did you remember that?
We got that in there. We made some special moves to get that in there because you told that story, and that story was classic.
That's one of my favorite stories ever. Right. It's you mentioned this, and it's important. You mentioned that even in the NBA, you had to have a coach who gave you confidence, had confidence in you. It's a really hard thing as a coach where you have to kind of know a guy and know that. All of us are insecure on some level. We need somebody, some way to get that. Because we talk in TV and radio, we talk about so many things that don't matter. Whereas what really matters is like, what kind of condition, your conditioning, because you're tired, right? That can come from some dudes just can run all day, no matter what.
Right.
Some dudes can't. right? Some dudes, you know, Gary Payton could put down his last beer, go to shoot around, sleep all day, get up, poop at night.
Man. Right?
And just do it. Some guys, I got to be in at 10 o'clock every night, get to bed, although I can't play. We don't talk enough about conditioning, and we don't talk enough about confidence.
Right. Because
confidence is, you know, like I couldn't shoot in college because I always felt like if I missed, my coach would take me out. So I was like, fuck it, if I don't shoot, can't take me out.
Focus. Right.
Right. And then I played for a guy. Do you know Maz Track? You know Maz at all? So his brother Mark just retired as women's coach at SC. Maz is like an assistant with the Wizards now. With
Marcus Nashville?
Huh?
What name did you say?
Maz Track. Maz Track.
Okay, no.
So he was coaching me in the ABA, and he was like, look, here's the deal. If you turn down a good shot, I'm taking you out.
Oh, I love him already.
He's like, I'm not talking about a shitty shot. You come open, and you turn down a shot, I'm taking you out.
Right.
So I'll never forget. So we're playing the Detroit Dogs. I just got off a plane from Israel because they're fucking around with the money.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to meet them. I got to meet them in Mr. Gottlieb, why you leave? We pay you eventually, maybe, you know, like, no. Nah. So I never got first. I'm in layup lines. Okay. And this is what Syria reminded me of. Can't remember what country. Todd Bergen is playing for the Detroit Dogs.
Okay.
I played against him. He's in Syracuse. Ty's a good dude.
Yeah.
He's like, where you just get back from? I was like, Israel. He's like, oh, for real? I was in the Middle East too. He's like, I was in not Qatar. He was in what was the country that we attacked? Not Iraq, next to it. Huh?
Iran?
No,
let me see.
In the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, what was that country? God, I can't remember. Hold up. I'll find it real quick.
Yeah, go ahead. No, so I can have it in my memory. Gulf
War. Kuwait.
Kuwait. Oh,
he's like, I was in Kuwait. I was like, man, what was that like? He's like, oh, man, money was straight. He's like, couldn't see the women except their eyes. Good weed, though. I was like, all right, Todd. Like, anyway, I come off a little horns, come down, I check in the game. Come off a little horns. They roll. Everybody drops back. I'm wide ass open. I'm like, pass the ball. Like I had just gotten in the game. Takes me out of the game. He's like, what the fuck did I tell you? You turned out a good shot. Coming out. It was awesome. It was awesome. So confidence is, what was the best way to make you confident?
To tell me that, you know, not take me out after my mistakes, you know. And a coach just to get in your ear and tell you that, like, don't please, just like that. I mean, it's a trickle down for everybody else too. If they see that you have that confidence and you're the guy too at the same time, that spills down on everybody else. They're saying, hey, coach is letting Trey relax. He's not out here pressing. Now I'm able to make moves and get you in the game, knowing I'll be able to get myself back in the game. So it works out all different kind of ways, Doug. But the coach, it's so crucial, you know, it's implemented on your success sometimes. And, you know, for me, I had some good ones. I had some bad ones. But I have to say it ended right there. You know,
best coach you ever played for is who? For you. Not the best coach, but just coach for you.
The coach for me would be Joe B. Wright. You know, that was the IBL for the Cincinnati stuff. he let me go.
500 a week?
Maybe. Yeah. About four. Yep. 500 a week, 2,000 a month. There you go. And I was happy in Cincinnati in the snow. So, yeah, but you know, great coaches, Hall of Fame coaches. I love them all. I love, you know, Jerry was good. Coach Brown, Larry was great. Willie West was good. Great too. You know, I was fortunate enough to play for some legendary coaches. So don't let me mention them. They were great. But as far as the connection was going, you know, Joe B. Wright definitely get that confidence, you know, and that was probably the only year where I averaged 20, you know, in my life, you know. So I'm always going to remember that because that's part of having confidence to put up numbers is you got to have a coach on your side or in your back pocket, you know.
From the Shaw to the Chip. Okay.
Yes.
It's going to be awesome. And hopefully I'll see you when we roll up to Sacramento. Or hit me up when you come down back to your old haunts in LA. I really appreciate your time. This has been really fun.
Man, it's been fun, man. It's been so natural with us because we got so many things that we relate into, man. So it's always a pleasure. I like to do, man. I think I'm. Can I throw mine up here? No, I think
yeah. My shit's going too, man. My kids give me my shit's going too. But you're black, so it's not fair. You look good like that. Like you're gonna look the same age the rest of your life, and I'm just gonna get older and older and older.
Oh man, hey, it only takes one day, man. I'm gonna try to keep drinking my water right here, man.
I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, hey, for real, man. Thanks for having me on, man. We'll be in contact. I'll let you know. Okay. Keep you up to date. All right.
I love you. See ya.
All right. Peace.
All right, that's it for my boy T. Folks joining me. I really appreciate you downloading and listening. We'll get you ready for the NBA playoffs and also some NBA draft talk. Plus, we have Brian Butch pods. We have two of them that will drop next week. Brian Butch, All-American center at Wisconsin. His mercurial journey to broadcasting, all the different places he played, and why he never made it to a game in the NBA. That's upcoming with our next pod. In the meantime, remember to listen to the Doug Gottlieb Show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you download podcasts. In the meantime, download, subscribe, rate, write a review. If you like it, you don't like it, liking it and writing about it helps me. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.